Welcome to the Inner Fight Endurance Podcast, episode 211, brought to you by Hoka. I'm doing the intro. I am doing the interview today. Tom decided to ditch me, and that's fine. We sometimes give him a day off. I have a guest today. You will recognize her voice. She's been on many, many times, mostly talking about triathlon or swimming, but today she's talking about her other secret love, Hyrox Racing. It is making its triumphant return to Dubai this February, and Jess will be telling us all about it. She'll go through the history. If you're racing this event, what you can do to maximize your time gain, what kit you should use, and what you should not stuff down the front of your shorts. She's actually still sitting beside me and she's laughing. Without further ado, let's talk all things Hyrox with Jess T. Jess, welcome back to the show.
It's been a while.
It has been. When was the last time you were on?
A couple of months ago, I think, for the swim podcast.
Swim podcast. That was very well received. People were listening to that whilst running in recent races.
Just getting into
their runs. Exactly. You're not here to talk about swimming today. There's not swimming in this event that we're here to talk about, but there is lots of other things. We're here to talk all things Hyrox. Now, I didn't know this term until fairly recently, and I have signed myself up to a Hyrox race, but I imagine quite a lot of our listeners will be the same as me. They maybe heard of it, but they don't know what it is. So you're going to tell us everything about it. Let's start off with what it is. What is Hyrox? What is this new fitness craze that's taking over the world?
Well, Hyrox, it likes to define itself as fitness racing.
Fitness racing.
Yeah.
Okay.
But basically, it combines running and functional workout stations where it's meant to be accessible to everyone. So it's not too complicated. It's designed that the general population can participate in it.
So people that would go to like a Fitness First or a general pop gym and do their, you know, the buys, tries, chest, bro splits, maybe they do a bit of running at the weekend. It's designed really for that type of athlete, or?
Yeah, absolutely. So minimal equipment needed. So you can do it in any gym, you can do it at home, running, so accessible to everyone.
How does this differ then from CrossFit?
The two sports are actually very different. They're often compared because they both fall under the umbrella of functional fitness, but actually they're really different. Hyrox movements are super simple. They've been selected so that everyone can do them, whereas CrossFit workouts are much more complex. Mm-hmm. They are advanced movements and they often take lots of years to practice and master techniques.
So people that are trying to train maybe for their first Hyrox event, they could go and they'd probably feel more competent if they had a home gym, or if they find a corner of their gym that they're members of, they could go and train these movements in a safe way, whereas they couldn't go and do one rep max snatches, for example, in the corner of their gym.
Yeah, I think safe is the key word there. They can, yeah, they're easy, low skill movements that anyone can do, as opposed to some of the really high complex, dangerous movements in CrossFit.
Okay. And attached to this Hyrox race, all I keep seeing and all I keep hearing the word banded about is hybrid athlete. It winds me up. If you run and you do anything else, surely you're hybrid. Where's this hybrid term come from?
Yeah, the term is like, it seems to have grown stigma recently.
Yeah.
Right? But like, it seems to be the butt of all jokes, even between some of the coaches here sometimes. But I really don't understand why people have got this negative connotation on it, because I've actually labelled myself as a hybrid athlete for many, many years, right? This, like, we run, we go to the gym, we do one rep maxes, we do CrossFit, we do cycling. We, like, technically, we are hybrid athletes.
Maybe it's just got more traction now that Hyrox is growing in popularity.
Yeah.
I think I read it is in, I want to say 11 countries and up to 4,000 athletes per event, with I think the greatest number of spectators has been 10,000.
Yeah.
At a single event.
Yeah. It's in 11 countries last year.
Yeah.
And I know that every year they're adding 4, 5, 6 countries every year. It's just growing and growing.
Where did it come from? How did it start?
It started in Germany, I believe, in 2017. where an ex-Olympian basically wanted to he wanted to devise something that was accessible to everyone, because CrossFit obviously is quite difficult, and it's just grown and grown since 2017. I think before COVID and during COVID, it was still there, but it wasn't quite well known. Yeah. And I think it's just really exploded since lockdown.
In the last couple of years, certainly. So there's running, there's, call it functional movements. What's the format then of a race or an event? How does it work?
So the great thing about HYROX is it's standardized. It is always the exact same.
Yeah.
So there's a global leaderboard. So you don't compare yourself just to the people you're racing against on that day. You're racing against everyone that's ever done a HYROX in the whole world. So like a global leaderboard in your age group and overall. So that's quite cool because it's standardized. It's not random.
So it's a leaderboard of personal bests.
Yes.
So if you have done it twice, then your best time will show up on that global leaderboard.
Yeah.
Got it. Okay.
And so the structure of every single HYROX is always the same. Okay. You start with a 1 kilometer run, and then we're going to go to 1,000 meter ski. Then we're going to do another kilometer run, 50 meter sled push, 1 kilometer run, 50 meter sled pull, 1 kilometer run, 80 meters of burpee broad jumps.
Which is a burpee with a jump forward?
Yeah.
Yeah.
That's tough, that one. And then another K run. Then we've got 1,000 meter row, then a kilometer run, 200 meter farmer's carry.
Which is carrying things in your arms with straight arms?
Yes, yeah, straight arms, heavy objects in heavy kettlebells in each hand.
Yep.
Then we run again. Then we've got 100 meters of sandbag lunges. So the sandbag will be on your back and it's walking lunges, knee to floor. Then we've got another kilometer run and then we finish with 100 wall balls.
100 wall balls. Yeah. Which, for those not in the know, that's kind of a CrossFit move. We'll call that CrossFit, won't we?
That's CrossFit.
Yeah. You have a wall ball, which is maybe three times the size of a football or twice the size of a basketball, perhaps. You squat down as deep as you can. And when you extend, you throw the ball up to a target. You catch it. Try not to get hit in the face and do it again. 100 times.
100 times.
100 times. How does a Gen Pop athlete or a CrossFit athlete or an endurance athlete, because this is predominantly a running sport. The majority of your time would be spent running, I would say.
Yeah.
Yeah. 8K, at least 32, 36 minutes, 40 minutes for maybe if you're slower.
Yeah, I think 32 minutes is the fast one, fast guys.
Oh, for the fast guys, 32 minutes. So predominantly you're running, but there's lots of these movements in between. Where do you even begin to start training for something like this or preparing?
I think...
How can I win?
Well, HYROX, it's an endurance event.
Yeah.
So I think the first thing you need to focus on is your foundation, like your endurance base. So lots of long, steady aerobic work. You build that foundation before you even think about starting to add in like more high intensity stuff. Mm-hmm. The same as we would if we're cycling, running, or swimming.
Would you say the majority of people are runners that go into the strength work, or strength athletes or CrossFit athletes that try and bolt in running?
It's actually a tough question to answer, because if I speak to like the general population that do this race, a lot of them come from a running background.
Yeah.
Because I think that the running frightens people that aren't from that running background. But if you go to like the elite level of HYROX and look at the backgrounds of some of the best HYROX athletes in the world, most of them come from more of a functional fitness CrossFit background.
Okay.
So I think it varies.
Yeah,
interesting.
I was listening to a HYROX podcast to figure out some more stuff, and listen to one of the if you like the goats of HYROX. This guy called Hunter McIntyre, stupid name. Actually, didn't like him on the podcast either. But irrespective of that, his runs are 3:30 per k.
Yes, super average. Fast, right? In between doing these high intensity stations, he's still managing to maintain 3:30 pace run.
And he's not, when you look at him, he's not like a lean stick. He's a very, very muscular build, and he's holding that pace.
Yeah, and Hunter comes from a different background. He actually comes from a running background when he was at school. Right. He was also a wrestler.
Okay.
So he went into Spartan races and came from that kind of background. So I think running is his foundation.
Okay, got it.
But he's pretty much unbeatable. Like he has the fastest time in the world, and He never loses.
And there's individual events, so you can do all of that on your own. There's elite, and for the elite level, all of the weights are increased, but the movements stay standardized. So it's just heavier.
Yeah,
everything.
So the movements are always the same across divisions, except for the small difference of 75 war balls to 100 war balls, depending on what division you're in.
Okay.
But everything else is completely standardized, and the only thing that changes is the weights of everything.
The weights increase. And you can do this in pairs as well. You can do a team event to add more to the mix, it more complicated.
Yeah, we can do pairs and you can do relay.
How does that work?
So the pairs event, you can have male-male, female-female, or mixed in the pairs. And the way that works is that you run together. So you all still have to do the 8K run, which is interesting.
Everyone always has to do an 8K run.
Everyone always has to do 8K.
I like that.
But then you share the stations. So if it's you get to the ski, for example, you can share however you like the ski. And then you go back onto the run again.
So you swap 500, 500, or somebody, one other person. Do you have to always each do at least a rep of something?
I think you each have to do something.
So you can do 1 meter and then swap.
Yeah. But that's very, very tactical if you think about it. Because if you have someone that's slightly weaker on the run than you, you would probably do more of the station, give them a bit of rest before you went onto the run.
So pick your training partner wisely.
Pick your partner wisely. And then we have relays, which is made up of four people. And in the relay, you each choose two stations. So on this one, you don't all run. On this one, you basically, in your four, you will do 1K run and then a station, and then someone else will do a 1K run and a station.
So you always still do the run, and then you follow it up with an exercise, and then you split that how you like.
Split it how you like. You can do two back-to-back, or you could do one, and then someone else in the team does one, and then you do one.
So everyone does two of each.
Yeah.
Okay. This is why there's 4,000 people at each event.
Yeah.
And then, so many different events.
Yeah, and the way HYROX runs is they run from like 8 a.m. in the morning till like 6 p.m. at night.
Yeah.
And there's constantly a stream of different events, different categories, different people going, which I also think is why people like HYROX, because that you never know. There's so many hundreds of people going at the same time. You don't know what race they're in.
Yeah.
So you're not racing against them. You're only racing against yourself. And there's no pressure like... In a 100-meter race, you know who's come first, second, third, fourth. But in this, I think people are more confident because no one knows. Because everyone, you could finish the same time as someone that started 2 hours after you.
That's right, and I guess you're getting overtaken by people on certain stations and then they're overtaking you.
Yeah.
And it's
like I could be on station seven and someone could be on their station one and they come flying past me and I'm like, wow, they're going so fast. But
they're fresh.
They're fresh. You got so it's just like a mass of people doing their own thing, basically.
How does it not end up then that so many people end up in one place at the same time?
They must organize it enough, like separate people enough, and the order that they do the order that they put people in.
Okay.
So they'll do like the individual men first, and then a couple hours later they'll start the pro women, and then the teams and the relays tend to go in the afternoon because obviously there's more people on the course at those times. Okay. But also the way they lay out the HYROX is pretty cool. Like there'll be like 20 lanes with 20 sleds. And then when you run in, you go to the furthest sled away from you. So then that person will run out and then they know which ones are free. So it's like a line of people.
Okay.
So it's really cleverly
laid. So you run through,
out.
If you like, through your block to the first available sled at the far end.
Yeah.
And then they see what's, and then that gives you then more running at the start of the station. But when you exit, you're right near the exit.
Yeah. Okay. And obviously, it's not really 8K of running, is it? Because there's quite a lot of running in, once you finish the K loops, get in and get to your station and get out from your station. So, yeah, it ends up being a bit more.
Okay. How the hell do you train for this?
I think, obviously, the foundations are always most important. Endurance. It's an endurance event.
Yeah.
So
you need to be doing some type of running.
You've got to be doing, like, nice... steady endurance work. You've got to be working on that aerobic base before anything else, the same as any of our endurance sports. Mm-hmm. Whereas people tend to get excited by HYROX and think, right, I just need to smash myself, so I'm going to keep running 5Ks, 8Ks, 10Ks as fast as I can, and then I'll do a bit of CrossFit on the side. But that's obviously like the backwards way around of doing it, where you need to get that base in there first, get that aerobic capacity up.
So let's assume I already have a solid base, I'm ready to rock there. Essential movements that I need to master for my HYROX success?
I think once you've got that base, you then need to start to learn to be able to run under fatigue. So like, it's okay going out and doing 1K repeats, but have you done 1K repeats when you literally can't walk because you've just done 100 meters of walking lunges?
Not often
yeah,
enough.
Yeah, it's very different type of running compromise runs, we call it.
Normally you do a 1K repeat and you get 2 minutes rest, right?
Yeah. Yeah. Whereas this one, you do a 1K repeat and you're going to smash your legs, either sled push, sled pull, the warbles, the lunges. Your heart rate's still going to be like zone 4, zone 5, and then you've got to go back and do another K repeat. So being able to hold that run pace for a long time when you're fatigued, when your heart rate's that high, but also being able to run after you've got nothing left in your legs.
How do you deal with that? What do you do?
So I do a lot of, like we call it compromise runs. I'll run a kilometer and then I'll pick up a sandbag and do 100 meter sandbag lunges and then try go straight back into another kilometer and try and maintain the pace I did in the first kilometer. And then also I've learned over time to the second run, for example, after the sled push or after the lunges, or even after the row, your legs are really fatigued. Mm-hmm. So just allowing yourself to relax for the first 200 to 300 meters of the run, let the blood flow get back again, try and get rid of some of that lactic acid before you get back into the run, and then build into it.
So you know those runs, you're going to start off feeling a little bit worse and you're going to get quicker in the second half,
yeah.
But it's not worth trying to set a standardized pace and say, I'm going to run each of these 1K efforts at 4:30, 5 minutes per K, because it's just unrealistic.
Yeah, and that's something that I've learned from experience. Like, okay, you know, I know now that the first half of the run can be slower, but I will build into it and make sure that I finish the run on a faster pace, or so that my average pace is where I want it to be.
Okay.
And just not to stress too much about it, because it's really difficult to predict how you're going to feel after doing 152 kilo sled push.
I think all the runs are indoors as well, so your GPS isn't going to pick it up. It's going to be very inaccurate.
So that's another way that HYROX like to standardize the event, that they all have to be indoors.
Right. So it's roughly the same temperature, same flooring. Very nice. I like this.
So GPS doesn't pick it up, so you can't really go off pace. I think my watch actually did work in the last one, so I was aware of my pace, but be prepared and learn to use your running IQ and to go off feel.
People hate that.
Yeah, I know.
Kit then. So it seems fairly straightforward. There's lots of running, so we need our running gear. There's lots of different movements, but you're not allowed grips, you're not allowed straps, you're not allowed anything bolted on, if you like.
No, minimal equipment needed or required in HYROX. Just your running kit and your running shoes.
So running shoes, it's 8K of running, but there's also loads of functional movements. So do you prioritize the run and then put on your best pair of carbon fiber racing shoes? Or do you go for something a bit more, let's go hybrid, with a bit more grip for sled push, sled pull? How do you decide what shoe to use?
So before my first HYROX, I had no idea what I was going to do about this. And I researched what the top 10 athletes in the world were wearing. And it was so varied, from carbons to like
Lunar
almost like
sandals.
Trail shoes to get the grip. It wasn't consistent what people were doing. So, and different surfaces for the sled push in an event compared to what you'd get in the gym.
Yeah.
So if your shoes work in the gym, they might not work on the sled push in the event.
Right. So what's the surface in the event?
It's a carpet.
Carpet, yeah. Like grass type stuff.
Yeah, it's not like a carpet, like an office carpet, for example. Like, okay. So it's not like a long carpet, but the sled does move and you do get quite a good bit of grip on shoes. So what I did for my first ever HYROX is I took 3 pairs of shoes with me to the event because I still wasn't sure, because I hadn't ever been on one of these carpets before.
Yeah.
And luckily in the warm-up area, there was a 20 meter section of carpet with a sled on it.
Right.
And I took all 3 pairs of shoes into the warm-up area, like an hour or so before my race, and tested them. And I knew that I wanted to wear my carbons because running is such a huge part of this race. And they're more comfortable, but I didn't know whether they'd work on the carpet. So basically I tested carbons and I tested some ons that had like really good grip and another pair. And I decided that I could get away with wearing carbons and still have good grip. So that's how I decided last time.
That's how you decided. And how did it go? Was it good? Did it work?
Yep, I had great grip on the sled, didn't suffer on that aspect. The only part that I thought was more difficult was the walking lunges in carbons, as opposed to me doing normal walking lunges in CrossFit shoes, which are flat. Mm-hmm. And the first like 20 reps of my war ball, I was wobbling all over the place because I was trying to squat in carbons, which hadn't really crossed my mind before then. So I guess you compromise a little bit, right?
Is there anything to stop you getting to that last station? Because there's no running after the war balls, is there? Kick your shoes off.
I don't know if you're allowed to take your shoes off, actually. Because I've seen people lose their shoe on the sandbag lunges. When you drop the sandbag from the back of your neck, it clips the back of your heels and it pulls your shoes off. And I've seen people sit down and put them back on. So, yeah, I'm not sure whether you're allowed to do it barefoot.
I've never would have thought that would have been an issue.
Yeah, so when you're racing next weekend, when you let go of the sandbag, like shoot yourself forward so that the sandbag doesn't pull your shoes off.
Right. Yeah.
There's a tip for you, Rob.
So carbon shoes, that's it. Look out for them getting pulled off by the sandbag. Yeah.
But yeah, no, sorry, after the warble, there's no running. That's it. You do the warble and you finish, you go up a ramp to the finish line.
That's it. I'm going to have to check these race rules. You've already sort of alluded to it now being, it's only, well, 5 years old, but it's already very, very competitive. It's growing very rapidly. And you've got like ex-professional CrossFitters all taking part. You've got ex-professional runners that have now made the transition over. So how competitive really is it? How has it evolved over time? Because it's been the same movement since its conception, right? What's the difference between how it's evolved over time, male, female splits, any of the athletes and their backgrounds? How does that work?
I think it's continuing to grow all the time. Like we said earlier, every year they're adding more and more countries and these countries are asking for multiple events.
Yeah.
So I think as it becomes more well known, it's drawing more athletes in. And I think Hyrux were quite clever at the beginning inviting athletes to join. Like they invited Briggs right at the start. So in terms of like the CrossFit community, everyone was aware that, oh, Briggs was doing this event, this Hyrux event. So it kind of built more awareness around it. And then like even this year, I know that there's 5 or 6 games athletes that are still games athletes now that are getting involved in Hyrux. So I think it's quite appealing to everyone. And I think the more it reaches out into different sports, the more it's going to grow.
Yeah. Do you see that it's almost like a new fad, like almost like a small cult following initially, and it's going to die off because we know people like new and shiny things. They, as soon as the new iPhone comes out, they want to go and get it. As soon as the new Samsung comes out, they want to go get it. As soon as a new pair of training shoes comes out, people are queuing up out the door and they sell out in 60 seconds. Do you reckon because this will always be standardized and it'll always be the same, people are just going to do it once and then maybe twice and go, do you know what? I'm done. I want to go back and mix it up and do something completely new. And then that'll be it. So in 5 years, you might not see it anymore.
It's definitely something that I've been thinking about because we've been in this industry for many years. We've seen things come and go, and then we've seen things stick, like CrossFit. So, everyone likes to jump on the bandwagon when something's new and shiny. But in terms of the standardized event, I was thinking about it as well. And Tom made a good point. He said, but triathlon's the same, right? You do the same thing every single time. You swim, you bike, you run. You do a 5K run race, you're doing the exact same thing. You're running 5K. And you play a football match, it's the same. It's 90 minutes, 11 a side. Most of the sports that we do are standardized. Okay, you have different factors thrown in like weather and locations, whereas CrossFit, I mean, Hyrux tends to take that out because it's indoors.
Yeah.
But most of the sports we do are the same thing, right? So in terms of the standardization, I don't know whether that will put people off. I think it allows people to track progress a bit better, because you can literally track one Hyrux to the next, knowing that there's no external factors.
Yeah.
And I don't know, like CrossFit seems to have stuck around for a while. And at the beginning, people took the piss out of CrossFit, being like, it's a cult and, you know, and people are doing that with Hyrux now, right? Like everyone, hybrid is the butt of everyone's joke at the minute.
Yeah.
You're like, oh, you're a hybrid athlete. You're not good at anything, so you just do everything. Which I kind of remember people saying that about triathlon.
Lightweights as well.
Lightweights. So I guess...
Full disclosure, I'm in the open category, and I think the open category is lighter weights than you.
I think it's the same.
Is it?
Yeah, so I think me and you are actually doing the same weights.
Amazing.
So we can compare...
Should we start together?
We can actually compare times on this HYROX event and see who comes out better.
Oh, geez.
I've got a feeling you might be better than me on the runs. I don't know.
I think you're catching all of the functional movements.
But yeah, I guess time will tell whether this is a fad. But I think even if it is, at the moment, the mass participation it's getting from the general population is just a good thing, yeah. Right? We're getting people moving and getting people into sport and enjoying it, which is, even if it doesn't last that long, I think it's great.
Definitely. I've not seen as big a buzz about an event online than I have done about this for a very long time.
I think HYROX are really good at marketing, at getting, yeah.
Yeah. Definitely. Be interesting. And I think post-event, what you generally see as well is lots of people, they're very good at giving out their photos, their videos with you in it. They're good at, they do this weird edit where you've got a 360 video around you and you have to do a funny dance, like a TikTok video. They give you that and everyone then reshares it and posts it and creates like a, this genuinely the reason I signed up was for the FOMO of seeing everyone else doing it and going, I wish I'd have done that to see where I'd rank up against these people. And then the leaderboard is very open. You can go and see. Each person's individual split for each race, yeah. And even what's it called, ROCS time as well.
Yeah, so when you see ROCS zone time, ROCS it means the time that you, once you finish the 1K run, you pass under a banner, that, and then you have to run to the sled. Yeah. So the time it takes you to run from the end of the 1K to the sled is your ROCS time, and they accumulate that time over the whole race. So I think last time mine was like 3 minutes. So 3 minutes of my race was running to the equipment and from the equipment. But you can compare, like, I could look at someone that's going to be racing against me next week, what they did last week in Manchester, and be like, wow, she did this on the row and this on the ski and this on the warbles. And yeah, it's good because you can break down every race.
I guess it's because there's so many events and so many sections, there's lots of room for error. So for somebody that's going to take this on next week, how can they minimize the errors that they're going to make? What are the common mistakes that people do make in an event? And what can they do then to better their time?
So the last event we had in Dubai in September, I was there all day. So I pretty much watched 3,000 people race throughout the day. And just because I was interested about it.
Do you have a spreadsheet?
Spreadsheet. And without fail, every single one of those 3,000 people went too fast at the beginning.
Okay.
I know you get excited and it's a race and you're like, you're full of adrenaline and it's 3, 2, 1, go. And you just, boom. But that first kilometer, like even non-runners were running like sub-4 minute pace for the first kilometer. You know, it was like so fast. And like you see them flying out the gates. And then by the time they get to the second kilometer, they're almost walking. So I think the big thing with HYROX is remember that it's going to take you the mass population, it's going to take you an hour and 20, an hour and 30, 2 hours even. You wouldn't go out and run the first 500 meters of a run at that pace if you knew you were going to be running for 2 hours.
Very true.
So I think pacing is the most important thing.
Pacing on definitely on the runs. What about on the equipment then? Is there any bit of equipment where people tend to really struggle?
Yes. So the sled push is one of the hardest parts because of the weight of it. It's very, very heavy.
Yeah.
And people panic because the sled's not moving fast. So if you go into this and think to yourself, okay, the sled's not moving fast, but it's moving. Everyone else is in the same boat.
Okay.
So don't panic and try and overextend yourself on basically the second station. That one. And then the burpees get everyone, the burpees.
Why?
Because burpees are hard anyway, right? Even when you're not tired. And they're like halfway through the event. So your heart rate's already been high for a good 20, 30 minutes by the time you get there. And burpees just jack your heart rate up.
Mm-hmm.
And it's a long way. It's 100 meters or 80 meters of burpees. It's a long way. And throw in the broad jump. This also adds to the fatigue and the heart rate. And a lot of people will do 10, 20 burpees and then just stand there with their hands on their knees, bent over, you know, huffing and puffing, waste 30, 40 seconds, and then go again, jack their heart rate back up again, and then stop. And
So they're wasting all the time that they tried to gain on the run and the other equipment for 30 seconds of wasted or dead time there.
Yeah, and they end up losing minutes on the burpees because they're so fatigued.
So how would you break up the burpees?
For me personally, I try to relax a little bit on the run before the burpees. So maybe I'll run 10 to 15 seconds slower.
Marcus is laughing at you.
Yeah, and then... why is he laughing?
He's scoffing. He's saying you're lying.
Oh, okay. And then my rule for the burpees is to never stop moving.
Okay.
So I'm never going to let myself lay on the floor, never going to rest with my hands on my knees. I'm going to constantly... And you know what's even worse? The way they do the burpees is in a straight line. So you've got everyone behind you, like you, on your tail, doing their burpee broad jumps. So it's kind of the pressure of the people behind you too.
So it's an 80-meter straight line.
It's 40 out, 40 back.
So how do you get around the corner?
It's like a U-turn. So there's a white line. You have to do your burpee over it and then get to the next white line on the other
side. So you can run around the corner. You could keep going.
But I walk.
So don't hit the inside lane.
Yeah.
Right. Okay.
And the same on the lunges. I just keep moving. Just keep moving, even if it's slow. And every person's going to have they're going to know in their head their strengths and weaknesses. If you know that your row really sucks and it jacks your heart rate up, then try and control that.
Go easier on the
row.
Okay, that makes a lot of sense.
Farmers carry. Just don't put it down. This is my advice to you, Rob.
Why?
Just keep going.
I wasn't
going
to put it down. Okay. My plan was to do the farmer's carry unbroken. But I'm not like my grips now, I'm told.
Yeah. There is chalk, though.
I've seen videos of people swinging the kettlebells in front of them and they're swinging them back and swinging them forward like a pendulum.
Yeah.
That just looks stupid.
So they're doing that to try and... Because when you throw the kettlebell forward, it pulls you forward. So they're trying to do it to create... So they can move faster with the kettlebell. But... It swings back. And another thing with that one is the grip. Your grip will go so much faster because you're trying to throw the kettlebells around. It's hard to hang on to those kettlebells for 200 meters. They're heavy. So by swinging it, you're just fatiguing your grip more.
Mm. 200 meters is quite a long way, actually.
But it's interesting when you watch how every person has different tactics with things like that. And like the step-ups on the burpees. Some people jump, some people step.
What's your take on the step versus the jump? Which is faster? Or actually, which uses less energy?
The step uses much less energy. So as soon as your chest has hit the floor, step up, get your feet back to where your hands were, and then do your broad jump.
Like you're popping up like on a surfboard and then jumping?
Yeah.
Okay.
Whereas someone like Hunter McIntyre, he jumps up because it's faster, but it takes up much more energy. He has that capacity to keep doing that.
And so he's... the best in the world. He's got the world record.
Yes.
What sort of time is it taking someone like him? Bear in mind, he's doing the heavyweights, isn't he?
Yes.
Okay. So how long is it taking him to get through all of this?
Hunter's world record is 55 minutes and 22 seconds.
Jesus.
I mean, that's pretty cool. When I did mine, my first one, I did it in an hour and seven. So a lot slower. Yeah.
14
What's
minutes.
That, 13 minutes, yeah.
Yeah. But then you think, I suppose, if he's running at 3:30s and you're running at 4 minutes a K.
Yeah. That's a good chart. That's 4 minutes gone
that's
already.
4 minutes right there already.
And I actually watched an interview with Hunter and people said, how do you structure your Hyrox? How do you run it? And he said, well, he's played around with different versions. Like he's tried to run like 3:15 pace on all the runs, but then he was... on average, much slower on the stations. Mm-hmm. If he runs at 3:30 pace on the runs, he's faster on the stations and gets a faster time overall. So it's a big game. It's a big game with where you put your effort in and where you hold yourself back a little bit.
Okay. You said for the general population person, they're probably looking at 1 hour 20, 1 hour 30 minutes then to get through all of this.
I mean, someone that's pretty good... that's a good athlete that can run 10K in like 40 minutes kind of level. That's quite strong. They're going to be looking to try and do around 1 hour 20.
Okay. So 1 hour 40 then for somebody that's maybe not so quick on the runs.
Yeah.
How do they fuel this? How do they hydrate? Do they have water stations? Do they have gel stations somewhere on the run? How does it work? Like, do you have to take your own food? Because that's a long time. If you're thinking it's quite a high intensity event, there's nothing there that is... you can take your time on because it's all light.
I think you can compare it to the fast guys for a 10K and to the slower, maybe a 15K in terms of fueling strategies and time out there. So before...
For really slow, about a half marathon effort.
So you're going to need a lot more fuel the slower...
So do you fuel your event when you're doing it?
So for the last one, it was well, it was my first Hyrox, so I was learning myself. And they said that you couldn't carry water with you, but there was water stations. There was a water station at the edge of the Hyrox zone.
Okay.
The rock zone. But it was actually out of the way.
Oh, so you'd have to leave.
You'd have to leave.
To get there, come back.
Yeah. And okay, maybe what? It takes you 5 or 10 seconds. But in my mind, I was like, I'm not doing that. And then one time I ran past the station and they gave me what I thought was water and it was Red Bull.
Amazing.
And you know, when you're redlining and you put a mouthful of Red Bull down your throat, it's not pleasant. So what was amazing.
I can't relate to that. I've never done that in my life. I want to though.
What is allowed in Hyrox is like outside assistance.
Right.
Which was not allowed in quite.
So you're
allowed
a crew.
Yeah. So the Inner Fight had such an amazing community down there last time. Like so many of our members came down to watch. So every time I'd run around the lap, I'd just shout at Tito and Desiree, water, please. And then on the next lap, they'd give me like a cup of water when I ran round.
A bottle of Sampee.
Yeah, so I had outside assistance because I didn't want to deviate from the course to get my Red Bull.
Okay,
And in terms of fueling,
yeah,
I just did my usual like pre-race breakfast that I would normally have if I was doing a triathlon or CrossFit or anything. And then it was quite a long time from breakfast to my start. And obviously pre-race nerves burns a lot of energy. So I had more food before I started. And then I took one gel on the course with me, which I had what I deem as halfway through, which is the row.
Where is that? In the about?
It's about halfway. And it, to me, the biggest thing that scared me in Hyrox was the burpees, because I think they're the hardest. So I was like, I'll get that out of the way. Mentally, I'm halfway through the race. I have my gel now.
Little celebration.
It was a little celebration. Yeah. And I thought, oh, I can take a gel on the row.
Yeah.
It's easier than trying to do it on a more difficult station.
Oh, very good.
So that was my strategy.
I'll take a gel and I'll get Tito at the side with some water and some Red Bull. And then we're ready to rock.
But yeah, just be prepared in case the water station is out of the way. Because it's frustrating in a race to turn back on yourself to grab water.
Excellent. Any other tips, tricks, that common mistakes that noobs might make at one of these events?
The common mistake is definitely going off too fast. You're
going off too fast. I guess as well, because you could be, I guess if they start this in waves of, I don't know, 20, 30 people, you might be with someone who's going out to run this event in a 1 hour time and somebody that's going to run it in 2 hours. So it's a real mixed wave start, much like you would get, you know, at the start of a running event, there's anyone and everyone all gathered around, but it separates quite quickly on that first run. And I guess it separates quite quickly when you hit the stations as well.
Yeah. And the second that you get out onto the run course from the start tunnel, you're suddenly in a mass of 100 people and they could be on station 5 or station 8.
So you're meandering around.
All it is weaving between other people. Now, there is a fast lane and a slow lane, but does anyone pay attention to that? Absolutely not.
How do you
not
determine if you're fast or slow?
I think I shouted at a fair few people, like, to get out of the way. Not to be like a dick or anything, but, you know, it's tight corners as well.
Yeah.
When you go round, it's tight corners. So that you have to factor that into your run. You know, if you're like, oh, I want to be able to run this at a 4 minute pace, you're going around bends. So that slows you down a bit as well.
I guess when the elites run it then, is it only elites that are on the course?
No.
Oh, yeah, interesting.
So, yeah, so I think.
So it could be with a massive bunch of pangs.
Yeah, the open men were already going when I went.
Open men,
run in and like, get out of the way. And yeah, you'd see me come flying past because I'm fresh. And
so I'll be on course. Well, halfway through.
They haven't announced it yet.
Smashed. And then you're going to come streaming past me.
I'll give you a little bum tap as I go past.
Thanks. Give me a Red Bull
and
a gel.
It could be the other way around. You could come flying past me. You start after me.
I'll not be tapping your bum. It is fine.
And that's me, right, saying don't run too fast. Like everyone, that's a given. But also, fuel for the event. I spoke to some people last time, some friends and some members, and they didn't even have breakfast because they're like, oh, I feel sick. I'm nervous. I don't usually eat before I train. Okay, that I understand that, but you're looking at doing like an hour and 30 minute high intensity race here. You cannot do that and expect to feel okay unless you're fueled correctly.
You might feel good for the first 20 minutes, but after that, you're going to drop.
It's going to be horrific,
quickly.
And you're not going to enjoy it, and you're going to not want to do it again. And it's something as simple as, did I fuel correctly?
Yeah. And if people that don't have gels, what's another good alternative for feeling something like this? I guess it's high carb.
Yeah.
Quick release.
Banana, dates. Banana. Like that. You can carry it with you. I carried mine in my shorts.
Not sure how the banana's going to look after 80 meters of burpees.
Carry it down your shorts. Mashed bananas.
Stick it in the back pocket, perhaps.
Yeah. And enjoy it.
Enjoy it.
Yeah. A lot of people take things, obviously, it's serious, right? I'm going to try and enjoy it. One thing I tried to do in the last race was every time I came past the massive inner fight community is I smiled. No matter how much I was hurting and how much I was dying inside, like they were there shouting for me, taking their time on their day off to come and support.
Yeah.
And I just thought, that's epic. It doesn't matter how much I'm dying. I'm going to smile and show them that I'm actually enjoying it and appreciating their support.
Hopefully they're there again, because we have a good number of inner fight and inner fight endurance athletes running this. This is the second time they've had it in Dubai, yeah. Isn't it?
That's quite exciting, because last time I think there was only one or two of us, mm-hmm. and that was coaches, me and Sandra and Vic and a few other in the teams. But this year there's at least 7 or 8 individuals and a couple of teams, and we've also got the relay teams going as well. So there's going to be a lot more of our members and our community racing. So I think it's going to be great. I think it's going to be really exciting.
So I need to figure out what I'm going to eat. I'm going to have to figure out my shoe choice, my outfit choice, and what I'm going to say to people as I pass them cheering every lap.
Yeah.
For 8 laps.
But definitely take a few pairs of shoes and test it.
Testing that. I didn't know there was a warm-up zone. That's very, very useful. That's good information to have.
Because you'd want to run in your carbons for faster running, right? Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And I've seen people wearing almost like gardening gloves when they're doing this event.
Yeah.
What's that about? How does that help?
I think it was you that talked to me about that last week.
You're not allowed grips.
And I was like, what are they?
These
like,
weird gardening glove type things.
And I've never seen anyone race, but it was actually a video of Hunter McIntyre that I think you showed me last week. And he had like gardening gloves on. They literally looked like gardening gloves.
Yeah. And a goalkeeper's gloves, almost. Yeah.
And I thought about it, and I thought, well, I didn't ask him, but I thought, why would he be wearing these gloves? And then I thought back to my experience, and honestly, sweaty hands.
Okay.
I think that's what it is.
Yeah.
Because although it's indoor and it's in the AC, I don't think I've ever sweated like that in anything that I've ever done. I mean, it's comparable to Track Tuesday in the summer,
okay.
kind of sweat levels. And I had sweatbands on. But my hands were soaking, and the row was where I first noticed it. I could really struggling to grip the rower because of the sweat.
Do they have chalk?
They do, yeah. They don't have it on the row though. I think they only have it on the farmer's carry and maybe the sled push, okay. like random buckets that she could easily run past it and not get it.
If you're going for time.
So yeah, I think it's about the sweat, the grip because of the sweat.
I'm a heavy sweater.
But shit. You don't need to bring your gardening gloves, Rob. Don't worry.
Take them out my Hyrox bag then. All right.
You can wear nothing. That you could wear
just naked Hyrox.
Naked Hyrox. You could like just wear what you'd wear for Track Tuesday, right? Your running shorts and your running shoes. That's all you need. Naked Hyrox.
The fee would be a lot less. Excellent. I don't know where to go from here. I think we've covered pretty much everything. So from there you've talked. Tell us how to train, structure of the race, some strategies, some tactics, the kit, how competitive it is. That was the other thing I was going to ask you. Just like, it's obviously very, there's competitive, there are professional athletes or professional Hyrox racers, if we like to call them, that do this. What incentivizes them? Is there prize money? Is there big trophies? Is there world championships? What do you do if you compete in one of these events and you're actually quite good at it?
The incentive with Hyrox is it's age groups. So they do 5-year age groups. So, and because it's standardized, it's the age group for the entire world. But each event, so like we've got the event next week in Dubai. Mm-hmm. If you win your age group, if you come first in your age group, then you get qualification for the world championships.
Where are they held? Is that the same place every year?
No, different place every year. Okay. This year it's going to be in Nice.
Nice.
Yeah, in June.
They follow Ironman around.
Yeah. And for example, like, so I have my qualification from the last Hyrox that we did in September. So this year, if I was to take the qualifying spot again, it would roll down to the next person because I've already had that qualifying spot.
Right.
So if there's a multiple Hyroxes that you do, the more chance you've got to take your qualification to world champs.
Okay.
And a lot of people are really into the HYROX world champs, even though it's quite far to travel. So I know that of the people that qualified last time in Dubai, I've been in contact with most of them and they're all going, which is nice. And I think it's nice to be able to say, right, well, in the 35 to 39 category, I am in this place in the world because it's standardized. You know, kind of going into the world champs where you're ranked.
And I guess it's quite good for them as a business because you're in that age category for 5 years only, and then you almost get wiped from the leaderboard again.
Yeah.
And you have to start again.
So they have two leaderboards. They have an all-time leaderboard and the current leaderboard.
They thought about it.
So if you leave a time in that age category that's like really fast, it might stay in that age category for many years to come, even though you've already moved into the next category, which is pretty cool.
I see.
And then on like a higher level, the incentive is there's something called the Elite 15. So if you are in the top 15 times in the world, you are in the Elite 15. And there's a series of Elite 15 races around the world, which you get invited to. And you can only be invited to those if you're in the Elite 15.
So they keep that top 15.
Yeah, and that Elite 15 changes every week because you can be in it 1 week and you can be out of it the next because someone's posted a faster time in Chicago or in Stockholm or somewhere like that. So that's like the incentive for the top guys to be in that Elite 15.
Yeah.
And then they will race world champs separately. So they'll be in Nice, but they'll do the Elite 15. And this talks about making it Elite 30. And then, so that's like the pro race, if you will. And then there's all the age groups going, I think it's 3 days, the world champs.
So that'd be a big event. And then I guess then everyone that's there for the world championships would watch those Elite 15 race. And that would be your big crowd.
Yeah.
So everyone who is there loves HYROX because they're about to race and they get to see all their HYROX heroes. There's lots of things you can say here.
Yeah.
HYROX heroes racing, well, just before them, I guess.
Yeah. I mean, in terms of like monetary gains from HYROX, like prize money, Dubai is the only event in the entire world that's not a professional event that has prize money. So for example, the Elite 15 races that they hold will have prize money.
Okay.
But for everybody else, Dubai is the only place in the world. Everywhere else is you stand on a podium and you get your 1-2-3 banner.
Yeah.
And that's that. It's just Dubai likes to
upscale things.
Yes.
So every age group and every category, 1-2-3 gets prize money.
No. So sorry, that's overall in Dubai.
Right. Got you. Okay.
But you still, every age group has the chance to qualify for the world champs.
I still need to go turn up at work then. I'm not ready to make ends meet through HYROX prize money. Damn. Excellent. Jess, thank you very much. We will see you. What date are we in HYROX? It is February the
11th
at the World Trade Center.
Yeah.
Do you know, you don't know what time you're racing yet?
Times are said to be released.
Pending
in the next couple of days.
Okay.
But they will, there'll be someone that you know going at some pretty much all day, every day, right? I think there's nearly 4,000 people signed up for Dubai.
Okay, so most of Dubai is going.
Yeah.
And rock up, you race, you hang out, lots of camaraderie, lots of community.
It's really nice to be there. There's food, there's drinks, there's that thing that you talked about where you dance in the middle of the light.
360 camera.
360 camera.
Amazing. So if you are racing the HYROX on the 11th of February, look out for Jess. She will be carving her way up through the field.
And look out for Rob with his with his banana in his back pocket.
Sweating buckets with my sweatbands on and no doubt a headband. Wishing I'd not worn carbon shoes.
No gardening gloves.
No gardening gloves allowed. Jess, thank you very much. We look forward to see what time you put up and see if I beat you.
Oh, competition's
exciting.
On.
Thank you.